I am so happy to be with all of you. Could everyone hear? Thank you very, very much for being with us in this very holy place in New York City, the Bhakti Center. Just yesterday, I came from Gita Nagari. How many of you have been to Gita Nagari? Please raise your hands. It is a farm community in Pennsylvania. It was a 3-hour train from Harrisburg to get here. There was a retreat there with, I think, between four or 500 guests that came. And I was asked to speak each morning and each evening. So it was Sunday morning. I was wondering what I should speak on. Because I'm not very intellectual, so it's hard for me to make such decisions. But still, I usually have to speak twice a day. So I was completely blank, which from a Buddhist point of view is a very enlightened state. but I had to speak. So I sat. They had some prasad for me, or breakfast, a little table, some fruit. And I just folded my hands and said, "My Lord, please give me something to speak." And then I opened my eyes, and there was this little, like a calendar, where there's one page, meditations for the day. So it had 365 pages, and there was a meditation for each day of the year. And I believe it was August 11th, yes? So it said August 11th, which is today. And it said Vrindavan Meditations. So it was sitting right in front of me, open. And I was so happy with what it said. It said, in Vrindavan, Vrindavan is the land where Krishna eternally resides. It says, in Vrindavan, everyone is happy. The calves are happy. The cats are happy. The dogs are happy. The humans are happy. Everyone is happy. Then it explained the secret. Because everyone is serving Krishna according to their capacity. Therefore, everyone appreciates each other and there is no envy. So I gave my lecture on that meditation. I don't remember what I said, but I'll try to say something. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam, which means that the Lord, who is present within every heart, who is living in his, the all-attractive, all-loving Lord, is most intimate friend for every living being. Not just people who are white or black or Americans or Indians or Africans or Chinese, or not just people who are Hindus or Hare Krishnas or Christians or Muslims or Jews or Sikhs or Parsis, not just people who are rich or poor, not just humans. Krishna is the best loving, well-wishing friend of all living beings. That means every insect, every plant, every mouse. I'm afraid to tell you this, every cockroach. Every rat. And every horse. And every lotus flower, every weed. Wherever there's life, there's the presence of the Atma, or the living force, the soul. And according to how we connect with our own Atma, our own living force beyond the ego, which is always misconceiving I'm this body and I'm this mind and I'm these thoughts and I'm all the things in relationship to my body, Janasya Mohoya Mahamameti, I am this body, I am these designations, and whatever in its relationship is mine. That conception creates so much division. It infatuates the ego, and where there's ego, what happens is if we do something better than someone else, we become arrogant. And that arrogance often leads to discrediting people, not appreciating people. And if somebody else is doing better, we could become depressed, that I'm worthless, I'm useless, why? Or we could become envious, where we actually really want to hurt the person or see them fail so that it doesn't hurt me so bad. These are all byproducts of the ahankar, or the false ego. And that ahankar, that false ego, puts us in a state of consciousness where potentially we could be envious of anybody. But when we actually understand our own spiritual nature, the glory of our own spiritual nature, there can be nothing better than who we are. There can be no one better than who we are. We're eternal. We're full of knowledge. We're full of bliss. We're a part of God. We're a part of the all-attractive, all-merciful, all-loving Lord with the attributes of that. What a wonderful experience. Not just theoretically thinking, I am, I am, I am, and then mind goes, no, 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 I am, I am. We actually are there. We are the eternal soul, seeing through our eyes and speaking through our tongues and moving through our bodies in so many ways. And whatever we do, we're doing it. Our actions and our words and our decisions are no longer, I'm so empty, I'm so lonely, I need more of this, and I need more of that. And I'll do whatever's necessary to get this pleasure, to get this satisfaction, to get this power, to get this money, and just a vicious, vicious race to get more and more and more. And the more you get in this world, the law of nature is there's more and more people trying to take it away from you, and you have to so much competition and so much defensiveness. And then the more you get, and the more people are trying to take away, and time is making you older. And then you realize I have to die, and the people I love, sometimes they die. I'm not the controller. I'm not the proprietor. It's very difficult. Therefore, we work and work and work and work, but never find true satisfaction. But when we come in contact with the Atma, the living force, the true self, there's so much joy. There's so much meaning and love. Love for Krishna, love for God, and natural love for every living being, and honor and respect for every living being. There could be no envy, because we can actually learn to appreciate. And then our every action, our every word, our every thought is to share that love. And if we work for money, which probably some of you have to do. I'm a Swami. I haven't had a job since 1969. But still, so many people come to ask me for money. I don't understand why. I spoke at the HSBC Bank for 900 bankers, and I explained to them that you are all such good bankers, and you asked me to speak to you. I don't know why, but I'll speak. I told them I have not had a bank account or signed a check since 1969. And they looked at me. They were totally blank. Nobody was laughing. As we used to say in the 60s, they were discombobulated. They were totally confused. Like, you know, have you come from another universe? But when we actually connect with the soul, that we actually experience who we really are, beyond birth, beyond death, beyond all the sunny days and stormy days of this world. And even if we're working for money, we're working for money so we could do something wonderful with what we get. It's meaningful. It's not just being oppressed by our greed, which is forcing us to do this. Because greed can never be satisfied. It's like putting fuel on fire. But we actually are earning in a spirit of compassion, in a spirit of gratitude. And compassionate people, people who are really compassionate, not just superficially, they are the hardest workers in the world. They're not lazy people, because they see so much needs to be done, and they do it from the core of their hearts, and they'll never give up. Because such a purpose. There is no motivating force more powerful than love. So in this meditation, it's describing how in Vrindavan, which means those who love Krishna, everyone is happy. Because everyone, according to their capacity, is satisfied to do the best they can to give pleasure to Krishna and their whole family. It is said when you water the root of the tree, naturally the water goes to every part of the tree. When we want to love and serve Krishna, naturally we want to love and serve every living being, because everyone is a part of Krishna. He's the root of the tree of life. Now, for those of us who have read the scriptures, how many of you have heard of what service the dogs do in Vrindavan? What service do the cats do in Vrindavan? Raise your hand if you have. Satyaraj Prabhu. He's our greatest scholar. So we read about the gopis and we read about the gopas. You know, they're the most intimate, loving, saintly devotees of the Lord. But you see, it's not that the cats in the spiritual realm are thinking, why do I have to be a cat? Why can't I be a gopi? Gopis get to dance with Krishna. And what to speak of the cats and the dogs. But no one is envious that I want to be somebody else. And no one is depressed that I can't be like them. because this is when we actually enter into the realm of the soul and we experience the infinite love of Krishna, of God, for us, who loves us for who we are on this spiritual platform. There's just nothing like it. The cat is just, Krishna loves me. And I'm so happy. And I wouldn't trade this situation for the world. And when they see Krishna dancing with the gopis, they're thinking, the gopis are so wonderful. Krishna dances with me. But he doesn't pet the gopis. And they're having their own little kirtans. Meow, meow. And the dogs. In this material world, there's so many different ways of thinking. In America, people really like dogs. I've seen, you know, people. I was just staying at somebody's house in Illinois, and I was looking out the window while I was chanting japa, and every couple minutes somebody was walking their dogs. And the dogs really look well taken care of. They're very well groomed. You know, I walked by one and it had like some kind of French perfume or something. It was really very fragrant dog. And obviously that's not its natural fragrance. So they really take care. And when a dog or a cat dies, a family member dies. It's a very serious tragedy of the heart. And then the same people, they're eating cows. And there's millions of cows being slaughtered in the slaughterhouses of America every year. And there's, you know, if somebody mistreats a dog, they could get put in jail. But slaughtering cows everywhere. And then I go to India, and I see in some places, you know, I'm being general because there's obviously people who are compassionate to all living beings in America too. But in India, I've seen people, oh, how they honor and worship the cow. And give the cow, you know, the cows have the right of way. Even in traffic jams, you know. If you hit a cow when you're driving in certain villages, they'll probably kill you. They'll just surround your car, knock it over, light it on fire because you hurt a cow. Yes? But those same people, when they see a dog, they'll take a rock and go, hop, flip, and throw it, and the dog goes, wah, wah, wah. So, what is that? But Vidyavinaya Sampani Brahmani Gabi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakicha Pandita Samadarsh. One who's actually spiritually connected honors the life force within everyone. So in Vrindavan, the cat, just waiting for Krishna to touch. Absolutely content, happy, ecstatic, giving Krishna pleasure like that. What exactly they do? Whatever they do is for Krishna. Even if they roll over, it's out of love for Krishna. And the dogs. And the different classes of humans. So, in this meditation, we learn what is actually spiritual consciousness. What is community? Community is to the extent we're actually able to appreciate other people's sincere efforts. One time, a person was complaining to Srila Prabhupada about a particular other devotee's bad habits. And said, yes, we should try to help them to overcome their bad habits. But as far as our thoughts of the person, he said, if a person's dirty and they're in the shower, do you criticize them for being dirty? Because they're still dirty. The shower takes a long time. Should I give you an example? It's a horrible example. It's a confession. It's something I did not write in The Journey Home, which is a book I wrote. But if any of you read that book, it's, what can I say? I was in London, and I was living on the floor of a basement of a church for free with so many other homeless people. And I guess I was traveling for quite a while, and I was living in all kinds of different conditions, sometimes in basements, sometimes under trees. I was looking for God, actually. But at one time, we met some people, and they gave Gary and me, my friend, a free pass to take a bath in a bathhouse. Now, why they decided to do that, I'm not going to go into any details. But anyways, it's a big house. It was a building right in downtown London. And they have floors of bathtubs. And they're just like kind of partitions. Kind of like some of the rooms in New York City. You know, you just make these partitions between the rooms. So there's these bathtubs, and they're really old bathtubs. They're like, somehow they survived the bombings of the Second World War. But you fill it with water. And you know, they have warm water too. And I went in and I laid in this bathtub, and within a couple minutes, the water was black. Yes? So I was thinking, God, I thought I was clean. You know, you don't notice how much is really on you. So I was all alone in this, and I had like, they give you like an hour or something to take your bath, so I drained it all, and I had to clean the whole bathtub myself because there was so much dirt in it. And then I filled it up with water again, and I laid down, and it was black, not as dark, a lighter shade of black. Let's say it became gray. And I drained it again. It took me four baths till the water was clear. Okay, so don't tell anyone that story. But I'm telling because I was really trying to get clean. So Srila Prabhupada explains, if someone is dirty and they're in the shower, you could either criticize them for still being dirty, or you can appreciate them because they're trying to get clean. Yes? And that's actually the attitude of affection. When Srila Prabhupada came here and was just across this block at 22nd Avenue, there were people coming in, what to speak of, not taking baths. I don't know how many bathtubs they would have taken. But so many habits and so many conceptions. But Srila Prabhupada saw a spark. Behind it all, beyond it all their defects, all they actually wanted to become They wanted to connect with God. They wanted to do something good. And he saw that spark, and because he appreciated it and fanned it by his appreciation, he actually made that spark grow bigger and bigger and bigger, larger and larger and larger. And at the same time, he was telling us what is unfavorable, what is not ethical, what is an impediment, and how to overcome it. But by fanning the spark, he was empowering us to actually do what was necessary to overcome the impediments that we were facing within and without. So this is Vrindavan, where we can appreciate Krishna in the heart of a dog or in a cat or in a cow or in a calf or in any type of human, and we actually appreciate the potential within them. Because that's what gives Krishna happiness, that attitude. This beautiful painting here is a depiction from a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Jiva Goswami expands on it in the Gopal Champu. May I tell the story? What do you see, someone who's standing or sitting besides the picture? Gauri, would you like to say? Krishna holding fruits. Okay, so I'll go from there. But this painting is a depiction of the story I'm about to speak. There was a very old, simple lady. She lived her whole life in the jungle. She had no education. She had no physical beauty, you know, by social standards. She was very poor. She just probably was living in a little straw hut made out of leaves in the jungle. And she would go and just pick wild fruits from the jungle and fill a basket and go to a village and try to sell the fruits and get something to survive. So she came to Gokul, Vrindavan, and cried out, "I have fruits. Does anyone want to buy fruits? If anyone does, please come and take my fruits." And Krishna, another name of Krishna is Gopal, he was just about 2 years old. And he heard this lady saying that she was selling fruits. So in those days, they didn't have currency. They would barter. And little Gopal would see his mother sometimes. She would barter different things they had in their house to get something else. So he picked up a handful of grains of wheat and ran very enthusiastically to trade the wheat grains for fruit. But he was so excited, and he was so tiny, and his hand was so small. By the time he got to the lady, all the grains had fallen from between his fingers, from the sides of his hand. There was hardly one or two little unhusked wheat grains in the tiny, tiny palm of his hand. And he looked at the lady with such eyes of affection and said, "Please give me fruit. I pay for fruit. Give me fruit." Very high little baby voice. And the lady was so charmed by him. She only wanted to make him happy. She wasn't concerned with anything except this child. "I just want to make him happy. What will make him happy?" And she gave him a fruit. And Krishna looked so happy. She just gave him one fruit, and Krishna looked so happy. So she, oh, this was the greatest experience of her life. So she gave him another fruit, and he looked even more happy. And then she gave him another and another and another, and she filled his hands and filled his arms with as many fruits as he could hold, and he smiled upon her. She was so happy. She was in ecstasy, Ananda. And then Krishna ran away with all the fruits. He dropped all the grains, but he wasn't dropping the fruits. And this lady, she was so moved by that experience, she just wanted to make Krishna more happy. So she decided she was going to take her basket and she was going to go back into the forest and collect as many fruits as she can and bring them all to Krishna's house and just give them to him to make him happy. She picked up her basket. What she didn't notice is because she gave Krishna those fruits, her basket was full to the top and overflowing with precious jewels. You see in that painting it has. There were gold, silver, platinum, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, lapis lazulis, pearls, precious jewels, jewels of this world, jewels of the celestial worlds. With the basket, fruit basket full of jewels, that was probably worth hundreds of millions of dollars, yes? You know, one of those at your New York's Tiffany's probably cost thousands and thousands. And there were tens and thousands of those jewels in her basket. But she was so enthusiastic to get more fruit for Krishna. She didn't even notice that there were jewels. She just picked up the basket. She didn't even notice how heavy it was. And she ran into the jungle and collected more and more and more fruits. And when she went to put them in the basket, she saw there was no room in the basket because there were so many jewels. So she just dumped all the jewels in the dirt, filled up the fruit. And it's not that least she like, you know, I'll come back and I... If I give more fruits, maybe I'll get another basket of jewels. She wasn't planning like that. She just threw them on the ground, filled it with fruit, and ran back to the village to give to Krishna. Krishna received them and was so happy, watering the root of the tree. Not only does our love extend to all other living beings, but we're also connected to the root. That's where we find our deepest nourishment. So Krishna took all of them and smiled. And that's all he did. He didn't even give her any grains. He just smiled. And she was dancing. She attained the ultimate perfection of life. It is said that you can understand how rich you are by trying to find out how many things you have that money cannot buy. Now, just 5 days ago, I was asked to meet some people at a very big international corporation. And the corporation, I think, is worth about $1.5 billion. And I was meeting the CEO, the CMO, the CFO, and the COO. I didn't even know what that means. You know, it was just the five of us sitting there in this table. And one person who I was acquainted with said, this is the CFO, and this is the CMO, and this is the COO, and this is the CA. And I said, I don't know. I said, you don't know what a Swami is. I don't know what you are, but what? So it was a chief executive officer, the chief financial officer, the chief marketing officer, and the chief operational officer. We're all sitting together. And one of them just flew in his private jet. And I quoted this, the same thing I just said to you. You can understand how rich you are by trying to find out how many things you have that money cannot buy. And this person is a multi-billionaire. And he became very emotional. Tears were in his eyes, and he started listing the things. He said, I can tell you, because I have so much money, I can tell you the things that money can never buy. He said, contentment, peace of mind, inner fulfillment, happiness, real happiness, and love. And he went on and on with a list of the things that money cannot and will never be able to buy. And I said to him, that sounds like everything good in life. He said, it is everything good in life. Money cannot buy it. And then I didn't say anything, but the obvious question was, you know, why aren't you a Swami? I didn't say anything. But after he went on this whole list, and he was speaking with such emotion and such conviction, money cannot buy any of these things where there's inner happiness, peace, or love. He said, but still, it's really nice to have a lot of money because you could do so many other things. Besides the things we really want and we really need, we could do so many other things if we have it. So this simple little fruit vendor, she realized the experience of love. And love is expressed through service, seva. And love is also awakened through seva, or service. And after she danced away, attaining the ultimate mukti, prem, the ultimate liberation of ecstatic love of God, she attained the very universal essence of all religion, to love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, to love your neighbor as yourself. She was in that ecstasy beyond birth and death of her love for Krishna. Forever. And Krishna gave all the fruits to his mother. He didn't keep anything for himself. Do you want to hear the rest of the story? He just had all these fruits and he started giving them all to his mother, Yashoda. And his mother, Yashoda, doesn't know that he's God. She's beyond that. She just loves him as her baby. So Krishna facilitates that intimacy of love by covering his greatness so that we could love him in a very intimate way to some devotees, like his mother. So his mother, she said, where did you get these fruits? And he said, a lady gave them to me. He said, I bought them. He said, I bought them from a lady who came from the jungles. And she said, just a strange lady? You know how mothers are of protecting their children? She said, you just were with a strange lady? You don't know who she is? You don't know where she came from? She said, you cannot trust strangers? It's not that everybody is like your family. You can't just trust everybody. Isn't that what most mothers tell their children and the world? And Krishna looked at his mother and smiled. And with all sincerity, he said, Mommy, he said, Mata, which means mommy, I don't know what it means to not trust somebody. That was his childlike expression. And he said, let's take these fruits and give them to all our family and all our friends and everyone in the village. So he pulled his mother's sari, and she was holding all the fruits, and he was taking some of the fruits, and they just went out into the pathways, and she was giving fruits to people. She gave one, and then another, and another, and another, and then Krishna gave her another fruit to give, and Krishna gave another, and another. She was giving hundreds and hundreds, thousands of fruits, and she was looking at Krishna and said, how many fruits do you have? And he was smiling. And what was that fruit he was sharing with the world? The fruits of his devotees' love for him. The devotee wants to share the fruits of their love for Krishna, and Krishna wants to share with the world the fruits of his devotees' love for him. That is Vrindavan. And when we connect, when we make that connection, it's not that we think, oh, what are you doing? Look at what I am doing. The gopas or the gopis, they don't look at the little cat and say, I'm playing with Krishna all day. What are you doing? You're just... we don't even know what the cats do in Vrindavan. Obviously, they chant. Meow, meow, meow. But it's an expression of their love for Krishna. Rather, the gopas are cowherd boys, the mother, the father of Krishna, the Brahmins, the learned people, they're seeing that little cat. Oh, how you are pleasing Krishna. What wonderful service to Krishna you're doing. How fortunate you are. How blessed you are. How can I serve you? That's spiritual consciousness. My beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, said that the Vaikuntha consciousness, that means the consciousness of the spiritual world, is when everyone thinks that everyone else is better than me. Nashato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate shata. Truth is very... This is the everlasting type of happiness when we have this consciousness. In this material world, or in worldly consciousness, that would really be a depressed state. Everyone else is better than me. Yes? If you say that to your mother or father, everyone else is better than me, they'll probably take you to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist will lay you on a bed and say, okay, my child, what is your view of the world? And you will say, everyone is better than me. And they'll write down some sorts of critical state of depression. And they'll probably inject some drugs in it. What else can we do with such a person? I'll inject drugs in you. And they'll say, now what is your view in the world? And you'll say, everyone in the world is better than me. It's depressing. But in the spiritual consciousness, if everybody else is in the better, then we either depressed or we're envious. But the only reason we could think that way, that everyone else is better than me, is because we're so totally, on the spiritual platform, self-satisfied. We're feeling the ecstasy of Krishna's love flooding into our hearts forever, infinitely. We're experiencing our own love for all beings flowing infinitely. In that state, we think everyone is better than me. Because our ego has no need to feel better than anyone. And when you feel everyone is better than me, what does that mean? That means you actually appreciate and honor everyone. And that is where happiness lies. Not in this ego battle stuff. I'm better, we're better. Krishna's best. Why should we fight? Why don't we just all agree that Krishna's best? Then we could be friends forever. And chant the holy names. So this chanting of God's name, this kirtan, is the process of awakening. Awakening that love, that consciousness of our true eternal nature that is within all of us. And as we speak so many times, this building here in the Lower East Side of New York was called the Bhakti Center because that's the idea. Bhakti means loving devotion to God in a spirit to serve and to share that treasure with others. That is bhakti. And center means that's actually the center of our life. And that's the center of our relationships with everyone we have in this world. And especially a community that's centered around that seva, that spirit of service, where we actually are here to inspire and enthuse each other according to our capacity and to appreciate other people's efforts according to their capacity. And this kind of center in our lives, if we focus on it, we actually empower ourselves to overcome the impediments, the disqualifications that we may have, especially envy and arrogance and selfish passion, lust and anger and greed and the tendency to find faults with others just to bring myself up and so many other things. So many addictions that we may be inclined toward. We're trying to help each other to rise above and beyond by experiencing the actual higher nature that is within all of us. That is why Srila Prabhupada inspired the devotees to establish this center. And with whatever historical or present challenges there may be, something wonderful could really happen if we just unite on this principle. If we just really try to receive and share this gift, the fruits of grace. Thank you very much. Should we end, or have questions, or have kirtan, or go to sleep? Who, Bhakti Lata Devi, you are the master of ceremonies, yes? Does anyone have any questions? We could have one or two questions. Yes, Venkatabhata Prabhu. Okay, did everyone hear that question? Essentially, he's asking, correct me if I divert from the spirit of your question, please. According to my understanding, he's asking, this example of spiritual consciousness that everyone is better than me, the material tendency would translate that as, I am worse than everyone, which is quite a depressing and debilitating and counterproductive state of consciousness. But actually, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. Because it's not based on the ahankar or the false ego. It's based on love. Out of love, we appreciate everyone as a part of our beloved God, as a child of our beloved God. Therefore, we want to appreciate, we want to honor, we want to serve. That's the spirit. And it is in that loving and honoring and appreciating and serving that we actually feel the greatest happiness and the greatest worth in our own life. I have often here cited the example of my god sister Amekala. I think this little story, again, will very nicely address the state of consciousness. A very dynamic woman her whole life. I think she had about 4 children. She was always socially an activist. She was always standing up for the rights of people who were not being treated properly and very strongly. She was always arranging social programs to enliven people who were discouraged. And she would fight for people. Very dynamic. She loved to cook. She loved to organize. She loved to speak. She was a powerful lady. She had cancer. And at the end, she was emaciated. She was paralyzed. She needed someone to clean her up when she responded to nature's calls. She needed someone to spoon feed her because she couldn't even pick up her hands to eat. She was totally incapacitated, and such an independently minded lady was totally dependent on other people to help her with the most basic necessities of moment-to-moment life. She got rashes if someone didn't pick her up and turn her on her bed from time to time. And while she was in this state, just days before she passed from the world, she said, "I feel so irrelevant and insignificant because I can't do anything anymore. I'm going to die." And then she smiled and her eyes twinkled with gratitude and happiness. And she said, "I have unlimited relevance because Krishna loves me. And there's nothing, anything in this world that can take that away from me. I have unlimited significance and relevance and importance because Krishna loves me." And then she smiled even bigger and said, "And Krishna loves everybody." So everyone has that unlimited relevance and importance. You see, in spiritual life, to the degree we feel Krishna's love, we don't get arrogant about it, that I'm better than you. We become humbled by that love. And as we're humbled by that love, it actually enables us to really love and appreciate others on the highest, most powerful, stable platform of eternal consciousness. Does that answer your question? Thank you. One more question. She's bringing whatever I said to a realistic, practical level. Thank you. I need people like you to balance my enthusiasm. Aaron is asking, what if you're not on that platform? What if you're not really happy seeing everyone better than you? Then are we supposed to try to act like that? What are we supposed to do? Why did you have to ask that question? It's a perfect question, thank you. Most of us are definitely not on that platform. And most of us, when we really think about that platform seriously, it seems like we're light years and lifetimes away, especially when things happen that really challenge us, and we realize how selfish and how envious and how arrogant and how depressed I actually am vulnerable to be. So we can't imitate that state. But we should understand that that really is the aspiration that we should be cultivating in whatever we do in life. If we honor that state of consciousness, it's like a map. when you have a map and you see exactly where your destination is and you really want to go there, you can't just be sitting in your house saying, I'm there. If you really want to get to that place because you know it's a good place, then step by step, inch by inch, foot by foot, yard by yard, mile by mile, we make progress toward that goal. But unless we understand and appreciate what the goal is, we never really, we don't know where to go, and we're not really motivated to move forward to get there. Yes? So what we're speaking about when Prabhupada explained what the Vaikuntha consciousness is, it's because we see in this world, we see racism. We see abuse of children. We see abuse of women. We see hatred and killing and death in the name of religion. We see corporate greed. Wall Street and other places where people, to get more money themselves, it's really just business if other people suffer miserably and their lives are ruined. It's just business. We see so much criminality, drug addiction, alcoholism, people murder. I was just, one devotee here from Mexico told me the town he was from in Mexico, practically the drug cartels murdering dozens of people every day. It's a common thing to just see people cut off heads just on the street. Today, for money, for power. What do they care for anyone else? It's just business. And we see wars. There was World War I. In some of our parents' or grandparents' own lives was World War II. Some of our lives right here. How many people were killed in that war? I believe something like 30 million people from Russia alone were killed in that war. 6 million Jews. There was about 70 million people killed in World War II. For what? What were they fighting about? This is my land. No, this is my land. Attacking to try to get land, to try to get power. That's what the world is today. So spiritual life or Krishna consciousness is trying to go to the root of the disease. The root of the disease is this avidya, this ignorance, where we're trying to be individually and collectively better than everybody. And I have rights over anybody. Yes? This is a problem. It's not theoretical. It's consuming the whole planet on so many levels. So this Vaikuntha consciousness is where we find real satisfaction. It's what we really value. In our present state, we may not be there, but it balances us. What I'm really striving for, whether I'm a simple Swami, or whether I'm with no bank account, or whether I'm a politician or a millionaire, you could be a multi-billionaire and be a pure saint if you have the right motives and the right attitude. And I've seen people like that. That is actually our standard, our aspiration, that in our hearts, this is greatness. Greatness is not what I have. Greatness is not the positions I hold. Greatness is not the complexion or the attractiveness of my physical body. Greatness is how I actually have these values. And whatever I'm doing in my life, I'm going to strive for that greatness of love and compassion and the ability to appreciate others. Yes? And when we make that, when we put that on the altar of the aspirations of our heart, then bhakti is a, bhakti yoga is a map teaching us step by step how to come closer and closer and closer and closer to that actual realization. And part of it is not only through chanting God's names, meditation, hearing, associating with saintly people, but also trying to, according to our abilities, trying to apply those values to our daily life in a practical and reasonable way. That's actually how we reach our destination. Does that answer your question? Yes, Peter. Last question. It's an honor to be in your presence. Because you're from Brooklyn and you have a loud voice, if you can speak loudly. Did everyone hear that? Did you hear way back in the back? It's very complicated to try to repeat it. But basically, he's saying that there is so much darkness in this world. And who actually has the right to judge what is right and what is wrong? Yes? Is that your question? Accurate? Easier to repeat that question than to give an answer. Krishna Surya Samayohaya Andhakaya. Krishna, or Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, or God, whatever, is like the sun. Is there any darkness in the sun? Huh? Are they dark? They're kind of shaded, but are they actually dark? So there's no possibility of darkness in the sun. And there's no possibility of evil or cruelty or hatred or ignorance or anything in God, because God is the source of all good, the source of all light, the source of all love. Now, if you look to the sun, you see light. But if you turn your back to the sun and look away from the sun, what do you see? You see a shadow. What is a shadow? It's the absence of light. Is the sun the cause of the shadow? yes and no. Actually, if it wasn't for the sun, we couldn't see a shadow. Right? There would be only darkness. There has to be the sun is the cause of the shadow, but there's no shadow in the sun. The reason we see the shadow is because we turn our back to the sun. So God is all light, all goodness, all love, all attractive. But when we choose to turn our backs away from God, then by God's grace, when we turn our backs, and by our choice, we see darkness. And then we have a choice to live in that darkness and to make things darker and darker and darker. So these are universal spiritual principles. But in order to properly understand universal spiritual principles, we have to learn them from people who have pure hearts. And to actually understand them deeper, we also have to have pure motives. We actually have to be striving for the light. So who has the right to judge? The Bible says, judge not lest ye be judged. God has the right to judge. We don't have the right to judge necessarily on this level, but we do have the responsibility to discriminate. If we don't discriminate between what is dark and what is light, the easiest thing in this world is to dive deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into darkness. Because in this world, especially at this time, which is called the Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, it's very easy to be crooked. I live in India. It's very easy to get things done by bribing people. It's very difficult to do things honestly. If you're feeling anxiety, it's easy to just drink a glass of whiskey. Yes? And you kind of takes the edge off your anxiety. Yes? It's more difficult to sit and Hare Krishna chant. You know, you have to actually invest some time and energy into removing the disease. But what's the result? So the easy thing in this world is to go deep. It's easy to just feel angry and lash out, right? It's more difficult to feel angry and actually act according to your best interest and others. It's very easy when you have some sexual passion to just devour the object. It's more difficult to remain chaste to our wife or our husband and to remain chaste to our spiritual values, is it not? It's a challenge to be good in this world. And it's not much of a challenge to do bad. Because we're so inclined and habituated to turning to darkness, to turning to the shadow. And because we're habituated to turning to the shadow, it may be more difficult to turn to the sun for some of us. But it's the right thing to do. It's the only truly beneficial thing that there is. And it's important that you know, we be genuinely sincere to actually be looking for the real thing, to understand what is real character, spiritual character. Who is there that's actually helping us to transform arrogance into humility, vengeance into forgiveness, greed into generosity, envy into compassion, hate into love? Those are the people we have to learn from. We're learning God's message from people who are actually living by God's message, or at least trying to live by God's message, honestly and earnestly. And as we become more connected, then we actually understand. Does that address your question? Thank you very much. I think it's very late. Since Prasad is downstairs, for all those who would like to take Prasad immediately, it's downstairs. There's a nice, is it a dinner or just, it is? Nice. For those who would like to stay for a short kirtan, I will sing. But before that, our beloved Bhakti Lata Devi will give an announcement. And I thank you so very, very much.